888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So it's really curious. I was saying that Will was teaching me about sitting. So you can try this while you're listening, and you can maybe learn something from it and figure it out. It might help you keep your body in happier. And it's really difficult for me because I've got so many years of doing it the other way. So if you just sit up straight in your chair, try that, and you take both your hands, put your thumb on your front of your body, and then your fingers on the back, and just feel that little muscle on either side of the spine. And you want to feel it where it's nice and soft, right? It's just kind of soft. All right? You feel it. It's not strained. And then just go ahead and lean forward a little bit. Keep your fingers there. Kind of bend forward. Or just move your whole body forward a little bit. Not bend, but just move it like you're moving your hips a little bit forward of your trunk. And you'll feel the muscle tightens up. Feel that? Move it back. When you're like leaning back, move it up. Feel it. Feel that little muscle. I'm down here about L4, L5, L6. Right above the, whatever you call that thing down there. You could do it anywhere in the spine, but wherever it's comfortable. Play with it, you can feel that muscle tighten up. Well, it's very, very possible. I know, because I just know the way I sit, and I've got one of those little chairs you bounce on with no back, and it's supposed to help you sit straight. But to have that muscle, for me not to have that muscle contracting, I've got to be sitting up real straight like you should in military school with your shoulders back and straight without leaning forward. And then it does it. But then as soon as you forget and kind of slouch a little bit or lean forward, you see it tightens up. So, I mean, I could sit like that for 8 hours a day for 3 or 4 months, and you could see how it could very easily affect other parts of the body. Because I had an email yesterday. I said, Patrick, I don't understand. You do yoga, you're rebounding, you're doing the Pa Da Lai Jing. How could this piriformis thing happen? And I was going to read it this morning, which I kind of just paraphrased it. And it's a good question. Yeah, I mean, if you saw the way I stretch with this Pa Da Lai Jing, wow, and rebounding, and I've done yoga for years. But there are things that we can do that we do do. Doo-doo, can you say doo-doo? Doo-doo, can you say doo-doo on the radio? Yeah, it's okay. There are things that we do ongoing, like sleeping in a certain position, or most importantly, sitting, or even walking or standing. And no matter how much stretching one does, it certainly helps, and it's a good thing. And if I didn't do all that stretching, I'd probably be in traction. You know, if you're sitting in an improper way that you don't even realize until you talk to some experts who know about it and try it and see. So there's a lot going on with structure. We are doing things in these physical bodies, as like I was talking about yesterday, you know, an hour ago, from up in the trees and down here and all this. And we're doing things that are very challenging to the body, and, you know, not eating, having a very challenging kind of foods, and, you know, electromagnetic fields and all this stuff. And there's a lot going on with structure that that little preventive medicine would be very, very interesting for you. That's all I'm doing, is just kind of telling you my story with the hopes that perhaps it'll save you, you know, some sciatica 10 years from now or whatever. You know, you just don't need it. You got more fun things to do. Take care of the kids or grandkids or wife or husband or yourself or whatever, and do your dream and do everything you want to do this lifetime, rather than spending it all on just trying to stay well. So the more and more we learn how to do more preventive things, like the right kind of stretches and the right kind of foods and detoxing, the more we can just kind of let go of all of it and just eat what we want and party down. 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. That's real freedom, is eating whatever you want, just eating whatever you want. I'm not saying going out and eat Cheetos and jelly donuts. But you can if you want. And I suspect you could get into a state of consciousness that you could live on jelly donuts till you're 200. I don't think it much matters myself, but it's just me. But you might as well, you know, make it easier on yourself and do the best food you can. Come on. Why do it that way? Like, you know, there's no reason to eat bad food. But I mean, if you really wanted to, you could probably figure out how to do it. But you might as well eat good food and support the organic thing for everybody else. So it helps, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Pure Pharmacist Adam says equals seminal vessels? I don't even know what that is. V-E-S-I-C-L-A-S. Piriformis can't substitute for glutes maximus medium minimus. Do squats the wrong way like a power lifter. Oh. Yeah, I'll have to get you on the phone, Adam, and you can tell me some of this stuff because I don't know how to do squats the wrong way like a power lifter. Oh, here's some more help. You people are great. Two tennis balls tightly tied into a sock is really good for addressing piriformis. Sit on and relax, allowing the muscles to release. Move it slightly to the next tender spot and repeat. Move the balls around until they entirely area relaxes. This is helpful if you have being your own therapist. Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm just putting ice on the sacrum right now, and that's loosening everything up. But those are great. Yeah, I used to have the tennis ball thing. I never got into that too much. Yeah, I've heard people do that. They put on socks, you know. But if you look at the piriformis muscle, it's just pretty amazing. It's like why we figured out how to run that whole sciatic nerve all the way through that whole thing and. That's crazy, I know. But there's a method to the madness of that, I suspect. Boy, seeing the right way is challenging. Joyce writes in, I was intrigued by the information Dr. Daniel shared about putting Vicks Vapor Rub into her eyes. Yeah. What are your thoughts on this? I'm sure I have the guts to try it. Well, she's just putting a little bit. Be careful of that. I think she said to get a little dab and then take a fourth of that. I don't know how she described it, but yeah, it was certainly very, very, very little. Very little. And I've done it a few different times, and yeah, I don't. It probably would help. She's a pretty smart gal. It's got turpentine in there. It'd probably be very good for the eyes. A little dab. I like to put castor oil in the eyes. That's a good thing to do. I like that. Pure castor oil. Be careful. Don't put anything in there weird, like I did 4 or 5 years. Remember that one? Castor oil is great. The Living Mana people. That has a little oxygen. They claim that that's a nice thing for the eyes. I've tried that. I do a lot of different things in there. Like to play around. You can do diluted DMSO. I don't know the combination of DMSO and distilled water, but there is a combo. I used to know the combo. Who told? Oh, that was Carol Borman said that. I've actually have a bottle of it on the counter there, and I've been putting, but I don't remember exactly what I did. Was it half and half? Yeah, I'd have to listen back. But DMSO is really, really, really strong. So be careful if you mess around with that in your eyes. Be careful. Anything that you're not, you know, or just be careful with anything you put in your eyes. But DMSO and Vicks, I mean, it's they're very, very strong medicine. So just be careful. Know what you're doing before you clump them in there. Because you don't need that. You don't need that. We got enough challenges without doing that. So what else have I done? You can do your own urine in your eyes. That's a good homeopathic remedy. So those are some fun things you can try. And if you want, remember though, take responsibility for whatever you put in there. And So, you know, so you don't blame somebody else. Well, they said you do. No, that's not it. People just give you ideas. They don't do medical advice. They shouldn't. And it's up to you. It's your body, your eyes, your boom, your piriformis. You get to do whatever you want to do, but you have to take responsibility for the results, right? Good, bad, and different. I don't know why people keep calling this number. That could have been Adam. Next time I don't know. I've been getting a lot of people calling this one number in the studio. I don't know how phone companies can give out the same number to two different people. The whole phone thing is so wacko, isn't it? Man. I was trying to wire a little bit of money somewhere the other day and I couldn't even do the wire because I had to get a code to prove that I was me, right? Which makes sense. And I get that because you don't want somebody wiring money out of your account to themselves, so they really got to be careful when they do this online, and I get that. So I appreciate that kind of security. But the only way you get the code is with the text message. So that's not really cool. I mean, not everybody's got a cell phone. How can you just assume? See, they just assume. They assume that everybody's going to get a cell phone. They assume that everybody doesn't want a landline. That's not right. It's not fair. Not true. Well, fair. It's not right. I don't want a cell phone. But I do have a $10 one that I pulled in from out of the car. And if I can figure out how to get service on my lanai outside, which I think I can. I can't get it service in here. I could probably get a text, but I don't really know how to do it. So I'm going to learn. Because I did ask somebody, and I think on this cheapo phone, I can get a text message. But you need service. You need to know how to do it. So I'm going to do it. So that way, if I ever need a text thing in here, I could go get my phone out of the car, right? Man, life is so good. 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. And on open phones, it's good when people call, and here's somebody. Hi, good morning.
Here I am. It is Adam.
I'm
with me on the other line.
Was it you?
Yeah, that was me.
Call on the other line. No, it's a better line. Call on the other line. And then somebody else
call the other line? Yeah, okay,
yeah,
will do.
And somebody else can call on the 800 number, yeah. Great. See, I didn't know it was Adam. Okay. That's why I just hung up on him. I'm glad he's calling. 888-663. Now you can call on the 800 number and talk to Adam. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Yeah. Boy, I had some more of that aloe last night. About a half a glass. Wow, man. Hi, Adam. Oh, I see you're on this one. Hi, Adam.
Am I on the right one?
Yeah, you're on the right one.
Okay.
So, how you doing, kiddo?
Super groovalistic, prosifunctificacious.
Well, it's only 8 o'clock in California. What are you doing up so early?
Yeah, we get up early. Sometimes I get up 4, 5.
Yeah? What do you do at that? Do you start writing and stuff?
Yeah, I either read, get on the computer, something like that.
What are you reading these days?
Marshall McLuhan, going back over my old McLuhan information.
He was the bomb, right? Oh my God.
He was the bomb.
Yeah. Tell folks who he was. I know him well.
Well, he was a Canadian, what would you call it? He was an expert in James Joyce, and then he got into media.
Yeah, media.
He caused a sensation in about the 60s. He was even in a Woody Allen movie, you know, in the opening scene when they're at the
Annie Hall.
That's it, Annie Hall.
I remember the scene. I think it was Annie Hall. Yeah, they were in the line at the movie theater, right?
That was Annie Hall. Yeah, it was. Where someone starts criticizing Marshall. You're saying he's an expert on Marshall McLuhan, so Woody Allen gets him out of the line and says, you know nothing of my work.
No. So, and the Marshall McLuhan, was he the guy, Adam, that actually came up with the idea of polling and seeing how many people were listening to radio and commercials and how you got so many impressions?
He's the guy who taught us that the cause of the Civil War was the telegraph.
Oh, I was thinking about the media stuff. I didn't know.
That's media. Yeah.
But he said the telegraph. Let's do that first. What? He said the telegraph? What are you talking about?
Yeah. See, what people look at in media, he realized was they didn't look at the gestalt. They looked at the content. And the whole thing about TV that causes our problem now, our globalism is caused by TV. It's not caused by anything they say on TV. It's caused by the TV itself. And the light bulb is actually information. Our whole lives have changed dramatically from the light bulb, simply because we can now drive at night, we can use computers at night. We have changed more dramatically than you could possibly change by any amount of information you're told or taught in school.
From the 1900s kind of thing, when the whole Edison Tesla thing happened, GE,
which totally transformed our life and made us instantaneously. We lost our body in the telephone, so we don't need it anymore. So it obsoleted
telegraph. You mean?
Well, the telegraph started it. It was the first one, and the telegraph was like, according to him, the pointillist artists who go by points. Because and the same thing with the television, when it first came on, it was made out of dots, lines.
Right.
And so you have to construct or be what he called cool media. In other words, you had to use your imagination and involvement. And that's why someone like Adolf Hitler would never have come to power with television. But radio is what he calls a hot medium, and the cool mediums are the one that disinvolve us, and that's like, anything with high content in it. A light bulb is cool because it's, strangely enough, even though it's light, it has less content, so you can become involved. If you have high content, like a lecture, you don't have any participation in it. But like on a telephone, they give you the telephone, and you do whatever you want with it. So it's a cool media. Anyway, and believe me, I'm still trying to understand the ins and outs of the hot and cool media, because when you're taught that television is more for your ears than your eyes, and it gets kind of confusing. But he understood that and looked through things in such ways that I've probably read more books on McLuhan, plus McLuhan still attempting to understand them. Even Terence McKenna, a whole bunch of other people have been attempting to interpret McLuhan for a long time.
Well, I know that media-wise, I don't know exactly what he all did, but I think he was, he's been said to be really responsible for the way radio is structured today and all of that, and the advertising and all that stuff. He was right in there, wasn't he?
He figured the computer was coming. He knew the type of media we would be getting involved. And, of course, involvement, it takes us back to a tribal level. But, of course, there's a danger in the tribal level. Like right now they have a narco culture. Due to the narcotics, they actually have narco saints and the war that they have over drugs, where people get killed, thousands of people a year, is actually like a war games that comes from a tribal television is actually causing it. You remember when Rockefeller, the grandson, got eaten by cannibals out there in New Guinea?
Well, I kind of get that one.
The tribes back there would have battles for fun because they were tribal. So they would, their greatest joy was to ambush somebody and kill everybody and eat them.
Oh, good for them.
Because it was part of the, it's not like war in a tribal society is actually fun, as strange as it sounds to us. So we've been in a bookish society since Gutenberg, and we can't understand that because books detach us from the environment. We are cool with books because we can look at stuff and detach ourselves entirely. You separate the ground from the content. And now that books are gone, we have radically changed life, and it doesn't matter what they say on television. You can't improve the content and improve what television does because it only does one thing, and that is its message is not there. It's the massage, as he called it sometimes.
They don't have a message, is what you're saying, right?
Well, there is a message, but it doesn't matter because just like the movie, see, the movie is the content of the TV because that's what they first did with it. They didn't know what to do before Johnny Carson and all that, so they put a movie. So you develop into what it is, just like the wheel developed into the movies because you have a circular reel to unreel the movies. It's a circle. So the movie, the content of the movie was the novel. And then when you had the novel and the movie, then you have to go to the next level. So according to McLuhan, we're always looking in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
Now on the computer, we're going backwards. Mm-hmm. So he said that's why in the 60s, we were going back to bonanza. Everything was westerns. Mm-hmm. People weren't living in the present. They had to live in the past. Remember, everything was a western.
Yep.
Gunsmoke,
yep.
Bonanza. Yeah. Big Valley, on and on.
Lone Ranger, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yep. And so now we're living in, the thing is, the greatest threat to nationalism is television. So until I get rid of the television, and the computer hasn't done it, despite what people say, they watch TV movies on the computer, you know, and movies from the movie theater. They're in the last media backwards. And this always happens until you turn around and look the other way, which almost nobody did. In fact, at that time, he was probably the only one that did that.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, that's why I'm going to make movies. And my next thing I do, because I think the content is like, whew, it's the new plastic, right? This is it, boy. Content, that's all. Great content.
Well, movies take us back into books, and that is good. I feel comfortable in movies. That's what I don't watch sports or survival. Those things are for people who never, you have an immunity. Anyone who was born before television or resisted it or got to play outside has an immunity to movies and computers that other people don't have. When you're born watching television before you learn to read, then the trouble starts. And whether, depending if you regard a tribal society as trouble or not, I don't. McLuhan was very uncomfortable with the media, is why he started analyzing it.
Hmm. You know, what you say about the rearview mirror is so interesting. I've been reading a lot of Paul Twitchell lately, The Flute of God, and contemplating on it and really looking at, man, it's so fascinating that most of us have spent lifetimes just looking at the backwash of the mind as what our reality is. Do you know what I'm saying? In other words, say the first thing that you wake up and the first thought is a little picture of yourself, whatever, making coffee or something like that. And so you know, right? You know you're going to go make coffee. Well, that's just a backwash of a memory of you doing that, of us doing that, right? So we buy into that, and that's fine. We buy into that, but we're really not going forward at that point. We're just really buying into, we're looking in the rearview mirror and experiencing that again, right? There's nothing wrong with that, but we do that. We choose. We make a choice. So we could just go from that thought into talking to God, and the coffee wouldn't even exist, right? And you know what I'm saying? So if we don't understand how the mind works, the mind is continually putting out pictures of possibilities, but it only knows where it's been. It doesn't know anything new, right? The mind has got no new information, you know, zero new information. It's just got old stuff. And it's why, you know, in the big picture, why people continue to pick the wrong boyfriends and girlfriends and whatever, right? It's just backwash of old ideas because people don't understand that they're not that mental, you know, component. And that just by accepting that that's what it is and that makes it real.
As McLuhan would put it, you can't see an electron. We look at an electron through an electron microscope and think we're looking at an electron, but we can only see where it's been because the electron is at the speed of light. So because we can't see it at the speed of light, we interpret it in a linear way. In other words, sight is connective, but electrons don't touch.
Right, right.
If we see a color, we're not seeing the color. We're seeing where the color has been or what it's done as an imprint in our brain. Mm-hmm. We cannot see a color because mm-hmm. it's the speed of light, too.
I guess it's that way with stars, right? We're not really seeing the stars. We're just seeing the light that used to be there.
Yeah, like millions of years ago in some cases.
Yeah.
The closest one we're seeing is 4.5 years away.
Isn't that crazy?
So we don't know if that star is still there.
So you look up at the stars, you say, well, that's real. And say, well, I don't, you know, what's real? I mean, it's there, but what reality is it? And does
that's
it
why I love movies like The Matrix, Dark City, The Truman Story, The 13th Floor. Those are all excellent representations of what we think is ain't necessarily so.
Yeah, well, I tell you what. Yeah, it's just funny. It really isn't. It really isn't. And I've been thinking a lot about this idea, Adam, that especially when I was going through some of this, quote, pain, unquote, and playing with pain and seeing how to, and I really got to the point where I saw that even the pain was just really a thought form, you know? It really was just like another thought of, I think I'll have an ice cream or a coffee or whatever, right? Or, you know, whatever. Another thought, just some strange thought, like Donald Trump is this or whatever, you know, just a thought. That's all that pain is. It really is no more than that. And you have a choice to accept it or not. And I was playing with it where I could just, I don't know whether really leaving your body or not, but you're just focusing on Hugh or God or something like that. And at that moment, that pain doesn't even exist. Doesn't even exist. It's crazy.
Yeah, the Buddhists used to do that, or the Zen practitioners. They'd go pain, 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 pain to make it go away. They'd go into the pain to get out.
Or they would go into it, yeah. And that's another way. Maybe it's both the same ways, but it's just looking at it from a different perspective, you know? Maybe going in towards what you might call the now or the whole or God or whatever is actually going into the pain. Because it's all one anyway, right? So there's no separation.
You know, the unconscious is so tricky that once upon a time, someone bought me scuba diving lessons in Lake Austin there. Yeah. And I didn't want to do it. But I didn't realize I didn't want to do it. So I put it off and I put it off and I put it off. And the ticket or whatever mm-hmm. was going to expire after a year. So the final day, I was going for the final lessons. My friends dropped me off at the bus station, and I'd had this tremendous pain in my left shoulder for like 2 weeks. Nothing I could do, yawning, stretching, anything, sticking out my tongue, giving the finger, nothing relieved it. So I go to get the bus, the last bus into Austin to go take this lesson, and they tell me the bus is completely filled. I can't get on the bus. And I say, I have to get there by the morning. I have to be on the bus.
I got to be there.
Too bad. So I went to call my friends who had dropped me off at the bus station and taken off. So I waited till they got home. And when I picked up the phone to call them, I realized my shoulder pain was completely gone.
Wow.
And never came back.
Wow.
Because I really didn't want to do it. And now that it expired and I didn't have to do it, no more shoulder pain, instantaneously.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that great?
Quantum healing.
Quantum healing. Yeah, quantum healing. Oh.
That's what Swami Nitty Gritty called it. Like I was adjusting someone's leg one time, and they were like 3/4 of an inch off, and nothing was working. So Adana was on the couch looking at me. So finally I said, do you have any suggestions, Adana? He said, yeah, ask him about his third grade teacher. So he said, I won't use the cuss word. He starts yelling. And his leg instantly evened out. And then the Donald said, quantum healing.
Well, you can really see how that works. If it's just now, and it's just all a thought form, and the consciousness changes, right? It doesn't exist anymore. It just doesn't exist. I suspect that's what went on with Jesus and the stories about that. You know, of course, the guy might have just went, you know, Jesus might have walked away and could have got unblind again. He could have got blind again. You know what I'm saying? They don't tell you that part. You know what I'm saying? They don't tell you that part. Because that's why this whole healers thing and all that, I think it's all, I don't believe it. You know,
I'm in the same place.
You know what I'm saying? And that doesn't mean that somebody can't help you to get in a state of consciousness where spirit will come in and do it. But there's no person, John of God or Jesus or anybody, that's doing anything to manipulate your body. It doesn't work like that.
They can be a catalyst.
But they're not changing anything. If they are, they're breaking a spiritual law. And anybody that's worth their weight in awareness, like Jesus, or they're not going to do that. They're not stupid.
Supposedly, that was when the woman touched Jesus's robe when he was walking. He went directly to his spinal area instead of what's called cosmodon healing, where you heal yourself by working with it. So when she touched him, and he's in a crowd, what do you mean touched him? He used his, what you call, kundalini power, they call it today. But he realized it, and he forgave her, and she got healed anyway.
Yeah.
But she basically was trying to steal his energy, and of course, you can't do that because you have to heal yourself. Anyway, that's some of the interpretations of how it goes, and I really am suspicious when someone says, I am a healer.
Oh, I just walked the other way. And even these docs that say, well, I healed this and I healed that, and no, I don't think so. I just don't. They don't get it. They don't understand it, you know. They don't understand the way it is, the way it works. But it's fine, you know. What you guys going to do around the holidays, you and the vibrant gal girl? Anything special? You going to go to a Christmas party at Oprah's? Have you been invited or anything?
Nothing. We just stay home and enjoy the holidays by not seeing anybody. We were supposed to go to Los Angeles, but because we had to babysit our landlord's cats, we had an excuse not to go. So. So we just stayed home for Thanksgiving, and we'll probably do the same thing for Christmas.
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you, can you relate to this idea of that little muscle on the other side of the spine? Do you know what he's talking about there? Do you
have the piriformis muscle?
Is that the piriformis there too?
Well, you know, there's muscles that counterbalance it, the iliacus and things like that. And what happens with the piriformis, it's the sit in the car a long time muscle.
Right.
Adano used to recommend when you take long drives, only drive for 50 minutes. And then he had an adjustment that you have to be really careful doing this. But one person pulls on your arm while you're sideways, and then you push the knee forward. Because you'll find in applied kinesiology, the knee gets unstabilized by the piriformis. So his way of doing that was just to gently push on the knee while you pull on the arm. But otherwise, you can do things to strengthen the gluteus because the piriformis tries to do the job of the gluteus. And since the gluteus or the glutes, the butt muscles, are opposite the piriformis and the psoas and the functions that they do to stabilize the hip, usually working with the glute, or doing love thrust, either way. You know, men often get that little pooch up there later when they get in their 50s and 60s, and they try to do sit-ups, and that doesn't even go to that muscle. But by pulling up and tightening the very pooch that's there, automatically they start to tighten that up. And since red muscle tissue contracts when it loosens, it goes away. But that's the same muscle that's involved.
So I do some yoga things for the booty, So those strengthen the piriformis when you do that? I can do more.
Well, what strengthens it is basically doing squats the wrong way.
How do you do that? Squats the wrong way.
A bodybuilder tells you to always keep your pressure on your quadriceps when you drop. So be perfectly straight, like Tom Platz, you know, the quad father. He had a certain powerlifting squat. But when people do heavy weightlifting, they really use their legs as levers and use their butt to lift up the heavy weights. And so that's considered the wrong way in bodybuilding. But it works for, like, women who want a big butt. Big booties are in favor now.
Yeah.
Then they would lift that way. So you're bent forward, and then you lift forward. But what you want to do for a piriformis is actually build it, but not using really, really heavy weights, but having weights and doing it the wrong way where the glutes are involved and not the quadriceps.
Oh, I think I pictured the heavyweight power lifter where they're bent forward, and instead of going straight up, they're using their booty to kind of push them at maybe at a 60-degree angle or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. But the bodybuilders don't do that. Like Vince Gironda, who was a
famous... Don't go straight up, right? Yeah.
He would ban squats. If you did, he wouldn't even have a squat machine in this gym. But if you did the wrong exercises, like leg lifts or crunches in his gym, he would go to the register, take his money, take the money out of it, and hand you the money and say, get out of my gym.
Get out of there, man. Well, you know, I've seen I watched some of the videos about piriformis on YouTube, and one guy I watched I really liked a lot. You could tell he was saying that just actually sitting or just squatting a lot helps stretch everything out too, like the natives, you know, like the people in Africa, right? With your front feet right out front, right?
That's why a full squat
full
works.
Squat,
you
yeah.
Go
all the way
down.
Way down
and,
yeah.
And barefoot. You must be barefoot.
Oh,
otherwise,
yeah.
Now, the heavy body lifters, they actually would use Vans. They're flat-footed, or socks, at least, but because they're lifting heavier weights. But if you're just using your body weight, all you need is bare feet, and that gives you... Well, if you use the heel, you can't go down all the way if you have a heel on a shoe, so you must be barefooted to do it. And then that takes the pressure off the piriformis, which is trying to do the job of the gluteus maximus.
It's trying to do it. I see.
Yeah, so, and of course, sometimes it activates the sciatic nerve.
Yeah.
They used to think that it was connected all the time, but that the sciatic nerve, it happens when it's closer. But in autopsies, they find out that's really a rare condition. So it's still the piriformis being weakened rather than the connection. But often the sciatic nerve is involved. You pinch the heel cord, the Achilles cord, and you also squeeze the heel. That takes the pressure off the sciatic nerve.
Squeeze which heel?
Let's see.
In other words, you actually really work in the heels of both feet that helps the sciatic nerve calm down too?
Use your hand like a vise. In other words, it's putting your heel of your foot in a vise and squeezing the vise.
Oh, I see. Are you on either side? On either side?
Yeah, either. Well, the side, you know, it can be both sides. It depends on how the injury happens. Like, if I punch something, the pressure goes... Like, if I punch with my left hand, the pressure goes down to my left hip.
Right.
But if someone punches me, I twist and it goes to the other hip. So it depends how the original injury or twisting or, you know, the step wrong off the curb, whatever
right.
it is, where it occurred, the dynamics of it. And then so you do both.
You do both sides. What about that little muscle on either side of the spine I was describing when we sit? And Will said that when I move forward, he showed me how that tightens up when you sit. Do you have any feedback or ideas on that? Can you feel that behind you're holding it?
Yeah, I think you're talking about the iliacus, the one that runs down the band in the front of the spine, and you do, I have to think about how that works. I think you loosen it by sitting, and that would counter and tighten up the piriformis, because we work forward to backward, side to side. We have three dimensions that the hip moves in.
No, but I'm saying, though, like I'm feeling right now, Adam Bacord, Of course, I have a headset, so I can have both hands free, and you're on the phone. But if you put your fingers on either side of the spine, right around L4, L5, L6, right, you know, up in there a little bit, just around the, you know, pretty much across from the kidneys, right there, and you can you can feel where that muscle is soft, right? If you lean a certain way, kind of back or straight up with your shoulders back. Now, if you move forward on your hips, or bend forward. Feel that muscle tighten up?
Yep.
So he's saying if I'm sitting like that all the time, that could be an impetus for a lot of this thing to pop every year or something. Does that make sense?
Sitting makes, that's why long car rides, the same kind of thing.
Same kind of thing.
Sitting is what irritates
the piriformis. So I just have to learn how to sit without contracting that little muscle. Man, that's good.
And never sit more than 50 minutes.
Yeah.
If Adonald was right.
Move around, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, get up. That's the same as that lady. What was her name? I think you had her on the show where she recommended it's not the sitting that causes the problem. It's the not standing regularly and getting up from that position. And that's the same thing Adama used to say. So we used to drive, when we had two cars, we would be switching around passengers.
I see. Yeah.
We had three times and we rotated every 50 minutes.
So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get another rebounder, and I'm going to get one up here, right? And just do that once an hour, right, for 5 minutes. That'll really, won't that? Or I could walk in place on the rebounder and
do the
cross
crawl. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, do the cross crawl, you know, just, yeah. Love thrust.
A belly dance, that's good for that.
Belly dance, right, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we used to do that motion with the hips where you kind of go around in a circle to the left and the right. It's an old yogic thing. And that really helps, too, kind of like you're doing the hula hoop, you know?
Definitely. Boy, the hula hoop is a good one.
That feels good, doesn't it? Man. I wanted to mention one other thing before I let you go. Oh, yeah. I went and did this Cryo thing. Did you hear us talking about that?
Which one?
It's called cryogenic kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, where you use ice and like
well,
that,
it's not ice. They have a place in Dripping Springs, believe it or not. And for $20, you can go in there and you take your clothes off and then they give you a
nitrogen
rope. Right. And then they give you little mittens and little slippers, right? So, well, you got socks too. So you put on a pair of socks, put on these slippers, put on these mittens. You're in your robe. You walk in this big tube where just your head is sticking out. And they close the door, and you give them the robe, and then there's a person on the outside. So she says, "You ready?" And you say, "Okay." So she turns on this nitrogen, and it slowly gets up to 140 below zero. Holy camoli. You talk about Wim Hof. Holy man. It's cold. It's cold. And I had to start moving, you know, just to do it. Because she said, "That's cool. You know, a lot of people like to kind of run in place." And after a while, what I thought the most interesting thing, Adam, with it all, the whole thing, is that it actually wants to try to put you into a fight or flight mode, because the body almost thinks like you're going to die, you know. The body just goes, no, this is not right. This is too much cold. But I burned through that fear, and that left pretty quickly. I said, no, I'm not going to die. Come on. Yeah. But that was interesting, and I suspect that there's people go through that, because she says some people kind of freak out after 30 seconds and get out, you know.
You know, there's a mind thing involved with that. You look at Inuit babies before they grow up, and it's 50 below, and they don't have any clothes on. They're crawling around playing.
50 below?
Totally naked.
50 below? Oh, my God.
Here, people die when it gets below freezing. Mm-hmm. The homeless people, there's about 5 deaths, I believe, a year. Maybe not that many. Because it's usually alcohol abuse or something that causes the homeless to die here. But some of them just freeze to death when it's not even cold. And yet here's the Inuit babies at 50 or 60 below during the winter.
Wow.
And they're out, their parents are all dressed up warmly in skins and everything, but they're playing naked. You can see videos of it on the internet.
Well, what's your take on that? So my experience was, you know, I was going through this kind of pain in my butt thing, right? A little bit of sciatica, a little bit of soreness at the sacrum, you know, just a classic thing that I've worked out now. And So I said, well, I'm going to go do this cryo. So I did it. And I tell you what, I walked out of there and I didn't feel one scrap of soreness in any muscle anywhere. You know, no sciatica, nothing, nothing. I said, well, this is really interesting. So I went home and Adam, but about 6 hours later, it was just back to where it was, right? So I'm wondering, what's your opinion? Do you think something like this 3 minutes in that cold of temperature is just a temporary kind of maybe a faddish thing that people are going to do? Or do you think that maybe if you did it two or three times a week, that it would actually have some long-term anti-inflammatory circulation benefits? What's your opinion?
I think it can, because it's like habit. If I want to use my right hand instead of my left hand, my left-handed, if I do it once, I'm not going to get anything out of it. But if I keep using it over and over and over, pretty soon by habit, I'll reach for the fork or the pencil with my right hand. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, unconsciously, well, look at what happens at New Year. How many times do you write 2017 when it turns to 2018?
Right.
And this goes on for a couple of months until you get the hang of it. Usually I do great the first 3 or 4 days, and then habit takes it back a year and I start writing the wrong date in there. And the same thing with habits. You've got to train it to do that. And so you get temporary relief until you get the habit of doing it the correct way.
So, in general, I guess cold does stimulate circulation at a deep level. That's why they pack the football players in ice after an injury?
Well, it's one way of breaking the pattern, because the pain, one thing you can do is a bioreflex distraction that I learned from Adano. You tell a person, is your pain feeling, does it feel better, does it feel worse, or does it feel just the same? If they say just the same, they're not going to get well. But if it gets worse or better, you know they're on the way to wellness. And by asking them that question, I had a tennis player one time. I asked him that question, and I was feeling his shoulders, and I thought, this guy is the tightest guy I've ever seen. It's going to take like 100 sessions to get this guy loose. Well, as soon as I said that and he concentrated on what they felt like, they totally released, and he jumped up and said, my God, what the hell, what did you do? And actually, I just said that sentence, and it released his shoulders completely, and that was the end of it. So that kind of bioreflex distraction works in habit, too. You just never know when it's going to release, but we do things by habit. Another perfect example. One time I was at Adano's school, and I raised my hand and said, when I clench my left foot, all the toes go down.
Don't do that. Don't do that, he said. Don't do that anymore.
When I clench my right foot, the middle toe sticks up. Yeah. He says, get to the front of the class. Yeah. And I've told you this story before. So he has me raise my hand, and he said, stop. Who told you to raise your hand that way? I said, what do you mean? He said, raise your hand again. So I raised it. Who told you to raise your hand that way? Well, what do you mean? So then he took my hand. I was raising it forward, raised it sideways, and said, now flex your foot. And my toe went down.
That's funny.
So unconsciously, we repeat the same body language. Yeah. And actually, we only have about 15 or 16 moves that cement in by the time we're 18 or so. And we don't think to use these other body movements. And actually, there's thousands of ways I could have lift my arm in front of me, to the side of me, backwards. Yeah. Instead, I was just doing it forward by habit.
Yeah.
Same thing with muscles.
Well,
they get in a rut, a muscle rut, instead of a muscle groove.
Well, I suspect that for the last couple thousand years, most of humanity has just done pretty much everything out of habit. You know, looking at the backwash in the rearview mirror, and they incarnate, they get old, and they die, and then they come back and keep doing it again. I don't know about you, but I'd like to figure out how to move on from this one and not come back. What's your opinion on? Do you remember any kind of past lives? What's your hypothesis on reincarnation or your whatever you want to call it?
You know, there's different views of it, and I'm undecided. But I've had memories of certain Egyptian things, mm-hmm. and And Adanos told me that I was actually Gutenberg's assistant, and I was involved in the burning down of the library in Constantinople.
Good
maybe
for
why
you.
I'm in the libraries.
You can do your library karma.
And so it fascinates me with movies like The Razor's Edge, you know, where he finally decides what to do with the books. He
right.
burns them to keep warm.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
So I think there's something there. I think, I think there's different incarnations. But there's other theories. Like, if all is one, I can live anybody's life I attach to. So there's different theories of exactly how reincarnation works. As the Buddhists say, what is there to reincarnate? We're all one from the beginning of time.
Soul would be what reincarnates, right? For experience, but my understanding from my teachers and who I trust, Adam, is that at some point we certainly can earn the right not to come back to physical reality if we do not. I mean, I think I can pretty much take that to the bank. And that's kind of interesting, to know that we can continue to, do other stuff in other realities that might not be as difficult as here, because it's not an easy place,
True. If Adama was right, you can do the same thing that Neo did at the end of The Matrix. You can come and go as you wish.
Oh, I think you can. Yeah, I don't think there's any rules. I just don't. I think we are a law unto ourselves, and as long as we don't, mess with other people's stuff or their psyche, they're who they are, I think we can do whatever we want. I really do.
In the third episode of The Matrix, how Neo frees himself from Agent Smith, Agent Smith is multiplicity, so he can be as many people as he wants. But finally, Neo defeats him by realizing he is one with Agent Smith.
That's
and
right.
And then Agent Smith loses his power of
that's
multiplicity.
That's right, yeah. That's right, yeah. And, you can look at pain like that, too. I played around with this idea of, I like the term, this I am, Some people say, I am that. But that actually separates it more by, because that kind of means a little, So I like this I am. That works a little better for me. Think about that, this I am. And I worked with that with pain and back to the Buddhist idea of moving into it, this I am, this I am. And the more I did that too, the less it hurt. It didn't go away totally, but the less it, And when you think about hurt, isn't hurt an interesting thing? Because you can actually contemplate on the idea, who is hurting, right? who is hurting, and if I don't resist it, do I continue to hurt? And, I think most of the hurt is because we're resisting it.
Definitely. Resistance is what causes the pain. When you get superconductivity, you don't even have any resistance whatsoever, so there can't be any pain.
Well, it's curious, and what you've talked about, the emotions and the different areas and how they're this matrix between soul creating anger or something, and then maybe it meets at the liver, and how these two are together, and even though they're all one, maybe there's just the illusion that there's a separateness between them, that they got to fight it or something like that.
People who have extreme back pain and suddenly win the lottery suddenly find they can run to collect their money without any pain in their back.
That's right.
Adano used to say, when people came to him that couldn't walk in wheelchairs and stuff, he said he could make them well in one treatment with precipice therapy, but it would be, first of all, he wouldn't make any money doing it, and the other thing, it would be inhumane. You simply put the person in the wheelchair in a burning building and walk away.
Oh, I see. That'll
9 out of 10 people will jump out of that wheelchair and run out of the house.
Yes.
And they actually, after I heard that, I read that actually happened in Germany, I believe. A place fell on fire, and about 90% of the people escaped that were in wheelchairs.
That's
and
hilarious.
Ran out of the building.
That's hilarious. Well, it makes sense, though, doesn't it? I mean, it makes sense once you believe. You've left out the belief that you can't move from there. You probably can move from there.
Well, see, often we say, I have a disease instead of I'm experiencing it.
So yeah.
A lady came out to my co-author's
house with
a license plate.
Yeah, I like that.
Her license plate said lupus, and my co-author said, you know, that's not a good idea to be putting lupus on your driver's license. And she was offended, the lady. I have lupus. Well, okay.
I want it, man. I want it. Come on. I'm not getting rid of it.
I earned this.
Isn't that funny?
Anyway.
All right.
She also said that when you have acquired diseases, acquire means to get, to go out and acquire it like you would.
Isn't that what they labeled AIDS? Is it acquired?
You bet.
Immunity.
And Donald told me to look it up in the dictionary. He said, what does acquired mean? And I said, well, it means to get. He says, it does not. Look it up in the dictionary. And it means to basically purchase.
To purchase?
Yeah. In other words, you don't just, it doesn't come on you. You actually go out and grab it. That's what acquired means. If you look it up in the dictionary.
Yeah, well, acquired efficiency, immune, what does it stand for? Acquired immunity deficiency disorder.
Yeah, and it's acquired. And acquired doesn't mean it's put on you. It means you got it yourself.
Well, that's the way it works for everything. We accept everything. Nobody gives us anything, right?
That was his point.
Well,
yeah.
No, that is the point. Yeah, we don't, nobody gets us anything, you know. Government doesn't do anything, or, you know, AIDS doesn't do anything, or cancer doesn't do anything else. We accept it, right? We said, okay, well, that works for me. Let's experience that.
Yeah. It's like the Sufi, they cut up in little pieces, and all he did through the whole cut up position is laugh and laugh. He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. That's ultimate detachment.
Yeah, there it is. Well, it's always a pleasure talking to you. You guys have a nice weekend. Thanks for calling. It was great fun talking to you.
May the blessings be, as you say.
May the blessings be. Thanks, babe. Adam Bergstrom, he just called up to say hi.
Awesome health can no longer be attained from food alone. Since the advent of chemical agriculture in 1945, U.S. soils have become progressively more demineralized and infertile. Human health has correspondingly declined. To reverse this trend and to even have a chance at feeling great requires sophisticated supplementation to make up for what is not in our foods. When our bodies are mineral deficient, they require more protein. We suggest you begin with One World Way. One World Way is a new and improved protein power food. Our technological enhancement yields us a whey protein that produces phenomenal results. All case histories indicate that your body functions in a more youthful manner. One World Whey not only supports detoxification, building of lean muscle, and immunity, it strongly supports your energy and sense of well-being. One World Whey tastes delicious and comes in single servings. You can click on the One World Whey banner ad and order right here at OneRadioNetwork.com. That's OneRadioNetwork.com.
Previously, Dr. Hal Huggins on detoxing mercury.
You do not have to get all the mercury out of the body. That's not what the problem is. It's the direction it's going. If you have more going out than you have coming in, then you're going to have a good chemistry. You're going to feel good. But if you have more going in to the body than going out, chemistries look bad and you feel bad.
If you had to name just a few things on the top of your list to help get mercury out, whether they be supplements or foods, give us your top five.
Okay.
Off the top of your head.
Best thing would be the infrared sauna. The thing is, detoxification is easy. Anybody can release a lot of mercury. But if you're using a sauna, or especially the infrared sauna, then you are eliminating the mercury through the skin, and you are bypassing liver and kidney. So that's a very good way to go.
It certainly is. We bypass. I've been kind of missing my sauna the last 3 or 4 or 5 days. When we have a little inflammation deep like that, sometimes ice is better than the sauna. The sauna will relax everything like that. But sauna, if there's some inflamed nerves, sometimes heat is not the best thing. So I've been just doing the ice thing, and that's where it's at. I may even jump in that Cryo thing again this afternoon and go do that. It's only 3 minutes and $20. Anyway, if you'd like to get a sauna, these are really fun, very, very fun. I'm looking forward to getting back into mine maybe this weekend once it's all done and flame. We're about there. It's just real fun to sweat and to detox and to You can do your spiritual exercises while you're in there and talk to God and talk to your liver and rub castor oil in your tummy and just have fun. If you'd like to get one, I'll give you a deal. I can give you a nice deal. We can. Doodle and I, $9.95 delivered continental U.S. And no matter where you live around the world, we can take care of you. Get the sale price. I'll work with you. And generally for about $200, we can ship one anywhere in the world with the different plug. So it's going to come all crypto and ready to go in Switzerland or Sweden or Japan or Australia. The right plug for just about the same retail price, $11.95. So it's a great deal. Email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, and they ship them out the same day too.
Know the source. One Radio Network.
Know the source on One Radio Network.
Bless the beast and the children, for in this world they have no voice. They have no choice. Bless the beast and the children. For the world can never be. The world they see.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
Well, good morning. It is Open Phone Friday. Open Phone Friday. 888-663-6386. 888-663. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. What a nice song. Bless the Beast and the Children. I don't know who wrote that one. I used it. Maybe it's a Burt Bacharach thing. Great, great tune. So I have a hypothesis about